Lee Chambers
on Cambridge 105 Radio.
Right where we are.
That's Ed Sheeran and Thinking Out Loud. We're playing that because we were sort of talking about thinking, I think, with Professor Jim Woodhouse from the Cambridge Philosophical Society. Good morning, Jim. And you're here to talk about an exhibition, 200 Years of the Cambridge Philosophical Society, which is at the University Library. So what is the Philosophical Society?
Yes, that's the place to start, because people who've heard of us are still often confused by the name. I mean, philosophy these days means something rather particular to us, involving airy-fairy speculations. But we're talking about a 200th birthday, and 200 years ago, really any kind of intellectual endeavour was called philosophy. And the thing that matters to us is that what we now call science was called natural philosophy. So at the time the society got going, natural philosophy and philosophical thinking covered what we now call. So really the society is Cambridge's oldest scientific society.
Yeah, so there's more of a scientific involvement than we might assume from the name.
It's 100% science, absolutely. This exhibition is celebrating 200 years of Cambridge science and the society's role in getting us to where we are now.
And why was it founded?
It was founded because 200 years ago, Cambridge was not doing scientific research. We've got so used to Cambridge being a centre for scientific excellence in all sorts of ways. And a lot of people don't realise that 200 years ago, really it was a low point. 100 years earlier than that, we had Newton and a real star of science. But by 1819, which is what we're talking about, the Cambridge University was a very different place from what we see now. The colleges were mostly there, but their main job was training clergymen. And so they taught them some mathematics and they taught them theology. There were virtually no departments as we understand them now. There were a few professors because individual donors would give money to found a chair in this or that. And the society's origins was a bunch of young Turks at the time. This was on the tails of the Industrial Revolution, and there was a move going on all around the country, actually especially in the manufacturing centres, for improvement and engagement with technology and, say, what we would now call science. And so things called usually literary and philosophical societies were springing up all over the place. And mostly, the name kind of gives it away, they were rather for amateurs, and they would have poetry readings as well as somebody telling you about steam engines. But because Cambridge had Newton, and they were still teaching the Newtonian mathematical view of science, when these young Turks, who were both geologists, that was the fashionable science at the time, they wanted to pick up on this thread, they wanted to be doing research, and they wanted to be talking to people about it. So they were saying, Cambridge needs a forum. We need to be able to talk. So they came back, talked to a few other people, and got this society founded. And essentially, it's been going for 200 years since then. It had a very important role exactly in changing the landscape of Cambridge science as we see it now. We're used to Stephen Hawking and the like, you know, we're world-leading in all sorts of sciences, lots of Nobel Prize winners and all that. All of that is new. The Philosophical Society didn't, of course, create it single-handed, but they played a really, really important role in crystallising that out and jollying the university along into offering degrees in scientific subjects. That didn't exist. The Philosophical Society had the first museum and library collection. They published the first scientific journals because communicating science was part of what it was about. And so they spun off various university museums, the Zoological Museum, the Earth Sciences Sedgwick Museum, the Herbarium, and the Botanic Gardens, and the Whipple Museum of Science, all of those things. And they had a library, which until my student days was still the place you had to go to see scientific journals. That's now part of the university library. But they were at the centre of crystallising things and being a ginger group and campaigning to get the university gradually to offer what we now would call the natural sciences degree And of course, you can study as a student all the sciences and all kinds of other things. And there are departmental buildings as well as college buildings. All of that is new, and the PhilSoc was a very much part of the pressure group that led to all that happening. So very, very important in that, particularly the first 50 years to 100 years of its existence.
And as you're saying, founded in 1819, 200 years on, so much has changed. So does this exhibition cover all of that?
Yes, it does. It has exactly that. It talks about the origins, but it also brings things right up to date. The society is still going. It's not so important because it's a success story, really. That original stirring agenda, essentially, that's been a success. The university is now doing all the things that the founders wanted, but there's still a need for encouraging scientific research. So the society still publishes two journals. It still has a regular program of public lectures. And we fund research. So we have a scheme called the Henslow Fellowships for scientists wanting to go down the academic career track. The biggest career bottleneck is what we call the postdoctoral stage. There are schemes for doing your undergraduate degree and then for doing your PhD. And then you need to get a bit more research experience before you would might get a faculty position in a university somewhere, and that's the postdoctoral stage. And there's always a shortfall of funding for that, and the society funds a stream of postdoctoral research fellowships through the colleges, but the money coming from us, and we think that's the most useful way we can use this money. The charitable aims of the society are specifically to encourage scientific research. So although we do things like public lectures and this exhibition, which we would now call outreach, but that's a modern concept. As a charity, we're not an educational charity. It's research is the stream, and we're very proud of the fact that we're still encouraging research. So part of the exhibition shows some of the work of some of the current and recent Henslow Fellows. So there's some current science going on in Cambridge. You then walk into the exhibition room, and you're back at the founders. There are pictures of the founders. There's the Royal Charter that the society was granted. And then there are various sort of thematic displays of interesting things that have happened in between. It's thematic rather than historical. The exhibition is not laid out, here are the 1820s, here are the 1850s and so on. It's rather we've chosen themes to do with the communication of science, for example, and journals, or themes. My particular interest, the particular bit of the exhibition I've put together, is that, as I said a minute or two ago, at the time the society was founded, Newton was still looming large on the landscape. So Cambridge, although it wasn't doing scientific research, it was still teaching this rather hard-edged mathematical view of what we would now call science. So even these would-be clergymen had to pass the mathematical examinations to qualify, and they didn't like it very much. But there was always this mathematical view. And so one of the agendas right from the start of the society has been not just encouraging scientific research in a general way, but making it quantitative, bringing mathematics in. And so we wanted to have a theme about the mathematization of science. Now, that's a difficult sell. So I volunteered to pick that one up. And I've tried to tell the story not in the sense that you'll have lots of displays with mathematical equations, but by taking a topic which runs through the 200 years, which is to do with waves. And one of the things that mathematics does for you in the background is that it may reveal that things which on the surface seem quite unrelated actually turn out to be the same thing. The same theory applies to them all, and these days the same computer programs might allow you to do them. So I'm talking about sound waves into ultrasound, and then light, and then x-rays and x-ray diffraction and Watson and Crick and all that, and then radio waves and radio telescopes and all those dishes down at Lord's Bridge, all linked together, and they appear to be very different, but they all have this underlying thread of shared theory.
And this is all at the Cambridge University Library. So 200 years of the Cambridge Philosophical Society. It's at the University Library, but it's open to the public.
Absolutely. Yes, the University Library have a little exhibition suite there. There's always something going on. And there's always something there. They're always open to the general public. The building is a little intimidating, probably, if you've not been in it before. But come along and see. You don't have to get into the inner sanctum of the library to get to the exhibition. We start in the entrance hall as soon as you get through the big revolving doors. The displays about the current stuff and the Henslow Fellows are there, and then it's a little room to the side is our exhibition. And as soon as we run until, I think, the end of August. The following one is, I think, an anniversary of Girton College and something celebrating women at Cambridge. And again, they will not only be open to the public, but positively enthusiastic to get as many people through the door as possible.
So just turn up and you'll be allowed in. And
absolutely, yes. From Friday this week, it's open to the public from Friday the 8th, is it? And then running for the best part of 6 months. So any time that the library is open. I don't off the top of my head remember their hours, but it's sort of 9 to 5-ish.
That's 200 years of the Cambridge Philosophical Society. It's the Cambridge University Library. Well, good luck. I know you're launching it this week. Good luck with the exhibition, and nice to meet you, Jim.
Thank you very much.